Welcome to the North Valley's own Jerry O'Lennon. On KKXX Life Radio, this is Live Local Talk.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday. We talk with Gidi Hansen of The Growing Place. We've been talking about boundaries. And last week, we left off at a very kind of a deep moment about certain family roles when it pertains to children and the firstborn. And it made me think of a quote from a former Justice of the Supreme Court, Antonin Scalia. He was a very witty guy, and he said something to the effect about, you know, your first child is like a pancake. You know, you might not make it right, but there's going to be more pancakes to be made later on. And it was witty and it was funny, but it kind of goes to what we've been talking about in terms of family roles and where we left off. And it's almost unfair, Gidi. Welcome to the show, Gidi.
Thank you.
It's almost unfair to be the first child.
So it can be, and gender is another thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, the gender roles that are the family rules and roles.
I look at it, but I was a second born, and I have two boys, just like my parents had two boys.
Do you have older brothers or sisters?
I have an older brother.
Okay.
We're identical in that sense. I have a family of two boys.
Okay,
family of four, two boys. And I was the second child. And I feel like the second child gets the better end of the stick. Even in my own family, I love both my kids. They're the loves of my life, and I would do anything for them. But I look back and I think, he's a wonderful pancake, but I could have made a better pancake if I know what I know now. And I feel like I'm a better parent now. Of course, 3 years later, after my second came, I'm wondering if that is unusual.
I don't think so. I look at my own parenting, and I wish I knew then what I know now.
Yeah.
But we, you know, God willing, we do our best.
Right.
With the information that we have.
At the time. Right.
And kids are very resilient, and God is God, and
right.
There is grace, you
yeah.
know. But getting back to the family therapy and the family roles, sometimes it's the role of a child to be the problem and to express the pain that's in the family. Like if the mom and the dad are having a lot of marriage issues that are unresolved, one of the children will take up the symptoms of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
One child is taught, you know, you're the one with the stomach ache, you're the one with the headaches, you're the one with asthma, you're the one who's going to be the family expression of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the release valve. You're the one keeping the marriage together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then if that child gets beyond his or her coping abilities, or the child is told, you're the one who acts out, you're the one who, or when we're having an argument, you suddenly throw up, or you suddenly start screaming, or you throw a fit, and that stops our argument, and we have to attend to you, and this is how the marriage is perpetuated. There's all kinds of things that, you know, you can see in this.
Sounds rough. How frequent is that in
marriages? Oh, it's quite frequent. It's just never stated so plainly.
Do you think it was like that in Jesus' times?
Oh,
Do you think these type of problems were there back then? Or did they just develop because of, because we're going to get into that as well, cultural issues that we have to deal with?
Every culture comes with its own ups and downs, positives and negatives. So if we as 21st century Americans are dealing with issues that maybe first century Palestinians didn't, we're also not dealing with the issues that they did deal with.
Gotcha. So I just figured out the answer. I mean, Cain and Abel, I mean, that was the very beginning of
family
roles and issues
exactly.
and problems. I mean, it happened from day one.
Yeah, and I mean, you could even look at the Garden of Eden and the breaking of God's law and eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is a marriage issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because Adam was standing right there and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He was the submissive husband. He didn't take, ownership or rulership of what he knew was right. He didn't guide his wife, and his wife did what she wanted. And And here we are.
Yeah, well, I think he blamed God. He said, this is, you know, the wife that you gave me
exactly.
is the one that did this.
There's, man, God was a marriage therapist right there.
Yeah, and then Adam said, you know, it was the snake. It was his fault.
She said blamed the snake.
Yeah, and of course, the snake didn't have a leg to stand on. It's an old joke. Okay.
Anyway, we see families where the child who's brought in is the bad guy and the one with all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that child has real problems, and I don't mean to minimize that.
Are there situations and where things are perfect, where there really is?
Well, if there are, we never see them.
Yeah, the old Ozzie and Harriet, you know, or Father Knows Best in the 50s. Did those times ever exist?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No.
I actually really did think that. I really did think that when I was young.
I think the whole generation did.
Uh-huh.
And we all felt cheated in our families because it didn't look like television.
Right. And it doesn't exist. And then you even find out some of the stars from those shows didn't have perfect relationships. I'm fascinated by, I've been reading biographies of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Oh, yes.
There's going to be Kate Blanchett's going to be playing Lucy in this special biopic. It's going to be incredible. And when I'm watching the shows, and I thought, well, they have a wonderful marriage, kids, and of course it didn't turn out that way. It didn't end. You know, you wish it did, but there were a lot of problems. So the idea that we think, and maybe misery loves company, maybe we sit back here and say, okay, things aren't great in our life, but you know, we're part of a pretty large club. Is there any solace in that?
There can be.
Uh-huh.
I think for me, there's more solace in healing up what's broken.
Uh-huh.
Addressing one's own issues. You know, when a married couple comes in with problems, they're always blaming the other spouse. And when through therapy they realize I'm part of the problem and I have to deal with my own issues and I can't change my spouse and my spouse can't change me and we each have to take responsibility and make changes, they're at a crossroads as to whether they want to continue therapy or not.
Yeah, negotiations and love songs. That was a song by Paul Simon. And sometimes there are negotiations involved in our marriages. We're going to take a break, continue discussing boundaries. Gidi Hansen at The Growing Place after this timeout.
Welcome to KKXX Life Radio.
Life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes.
This is live local talk.
So wake me up when he's
a fascinating discussion when we talk about cultural expectations. And our cultures clash. We see that happening in our world on a minute by minute basis. We see the cultures, you know, on our iPhones and on television. And the way cultures live in the Middle East and what their culture is and what they believe, and then it interacts with the cultures that we have in the United States. And each culture has different expectations and different boundaries that come with it. And because of that, there is obviously tremendous conflict. Gidi Hansen, a licensed marriage and family therapist, is my guest today with The Growing Place. And You could speak really very wisely to this.
I grew up with two cultures. I grew up in America inside of a Middle Eastern home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was a westernized Middle Eastern home, but it also was very Middle Eastern in the things that I was taught, the way I was taught to relate to people. Honor and respect is very important in the Middle Eastern culture, and it used to be in the European culture, too, if you read literature from the Renaissance era. If you read Shakespeare, you see that honor is very important. Honor means you don't break your word. Honor means that you're willing to die for something you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I very often have cultural clashes of boundaries in my day-to-day life. I have to remind myself, I'm with Americans. I have to remember I'm an American when I'm with Americans, and I'm an Iranian when I'm with Iranians. And I can give you a funny example.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I met a whole new group of Iranian people whom I had never met before, and they were all practicing Muslims and pretty high-end, high-paid professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very westernized in their occupation and in their knowledge of the English language, but all of the social and cultural stuff was still very, very Iranian.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the home of one of them, and I had just met this huge group of women, and there was a sofa, and they all wanted to get to know me. So about five or six of them crammed in on the sofa with me, and this speaks to personal space.
Mm-hmm.
One of them grabbed one of my hands. One of them grabbed another hand. I'm being squished. And they're all talking at the same time and all asking me questions. And when they're talking, I am not exaggerating here. I am like half an inch away from the woman's nose who's talking to me.
Mm.
And I wear glasses, and the glasses blurred the face. So I had to look over my glasses because I'm nearsighted to be able to keep this woman in focus. And she's almost talking like mouth to mouth. And what they're saying in the Persian culture is, we like you. We accept you. You are part of our group. And we're very curious about you. And they were showing me great affection, honor, respect.
Mm-hmm.
The American side of me was like, somebody give me room to breathe here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is I just kept telling myself, this is your Persians here with Persians. You know, don't sweat it. It's okay. And I went with it. And I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, I was with my American friends. And I started echoing what I often hear from the Iranians. Americans are so distant. Americans are so aloof. Americans are so independent. Americans don't show emotion. They don't show affection, you know. And I was like, wow, I really, really get it. Because I was getting conditioned, even in that one encounter, to really like, although I felt uncomfortable in the beginning, to really like that closeness, like a pile of kittens.
Mm-hmm.
Or a pile of puppies, and you know that kind of socialization where you're very up close, and now suddenly you're little puppy standing on your own, looking out at the world.
What about people who don't feel comfortable with that? Do they just say, you know, so this culture is not for me, and I'm going to walk away?
There are some Iranians who, you know, for whatever reason, do not participate in that, but it's not the cultural norm.
Uh-huh.
It's not the cultural norm.
Well,
let me just explain another thing. Then there's the cross-gender thing. You would never, and I should never say never, but even with very westernized Iranians, you will not see men and women jammed on a sofa together, holding each other's hands, speaking nose to nose.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a cultural taboo. Men will kiss men in public. They will hold hands. They will walk arm in arm. They will hug. But you don't touch a woman who is not your blood relative or your wife.
Mm.
And vice versa. And I had to teach my husband this when we would be in a Middle Eastern company. And it's, you know, you think of a reception line in American culture. Well, in Middle Eastern culture, you come into a room and you need to shake hands with everybody in the room or acknowledge and say hello directly to everybody in the room, or you are considered very, very rude. And so my husband is doing that in a Middle Eastern way, and he's putting his hand out to women who are veiled, have their heads covered, and the women are cowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain, and then other women are readily shaking his hand, and he's like, how do I know what to do? And I had to explain to him, wait and watch the woman. If she extends her hand, shake her hand. If she doesn't, just nod and go on.
How do you resolve this type of cultural difference? Because it would seem to me, if I felt in an uncomfortable cultural situation, I might merely just walk away and not want to be...
And if you had nothing invested in it, you would.
Yeah, you just, this is not something for me.
But if your wife was invested in it,
then you don't have that option. Right. Right.
You know?
And I guess maybe that also is where it comes down to, is this couple, we talked even in the previous week, you know, about whether or not, we're going to take a break right now, but whether or not this marriage might even work if there are such huge cultural boundary limitations.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll wrap up our discussion with Gidi. And we'll continue, I think, talking a little bit more about cultural differences and boundaries just because it's pretty darn interesting. We'll be right back.
Welcome to KKXX Life Radio. This is Live Local Talk.
All right, welcome back to the show. March for Life is beginning next week, March 1st. It runs through April 9th, 40 Days for Life. This is a pro-life organization. They do wonderful things. They go to in front of Planned Parenthood. They don't do any of the crazy signs, the some would say the gruesome results of abortion, none of that. They just pray. They have some simple vigils praying, and there are large groups there in front of Planned Parenthood. They're located at 3100 Cohasset Street is where Planned Parenthood is in Chico. The vigil hours take place from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening, daily, for 40 consecutive days. Mary Waldorf, what a saint. I mean, if there's a living saint here in this world, it's Mary Waldorf who puts this together, and the group is called Chico Respects Life. And if you've ever thought about it, and you know, I know a lot of people talk about being pro-life, and they say, well, we're going to do something. You know, we care about life, but then they don't really do anything. These people do things, and if you want to really do something and try to make a difference, you can spend an hour out there praying, you know, and if you want to learn more, it's 345-8638, 345-8638, Chico Respects Life. The 40 Days for Life starts March 1st and runs through April 9th. Continue our discussion with Gidi Hansen over at The Growing Place. And in a sense, that's almost sort of a cultural difference, too, when you talk about that issue, although we don't necessarily need to go into that.
Yes, there are different cultures even right here in America.
Right.
Lots of different cultures and communities. And so, personally, because I've lived with this all my life, I strive to respect the other culture, even if I disagree with them.
That's the biggest part of it. And
yes.
And I don't want to get political. That's not what we do on this part of our weekly show. I have other days for that. But I don't suspect you would want to do that either. But
no.
the idea that there's not listening back and forth on this particular issue. You
right.
know, when I saw that the March for Life people. The pro-choice people don't even want to talk to those people who are pro-life, and the pro-life people, you know, many of them are like, you know, you're evil and you're bad, and they don't
yes.
want to listen to their side.
Dehumanizing.
Yeah. So it's I think when we were going into the break, you were talking about the cultural differences, especially now as we have such a melting pot of different cultures in our society.
Yes.
We got the Syrians coming over. We got
yeah.
Iranians. We got so many different cultures.
Yes.
I guess the word you used is respecting their
yes.
belief system.
We need to respect each other. We don't have to agree with each other. Mm-hmm. But and dehumanizing each other isn't going to help anything
mm-hmm.
at all. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. You know, I really love the perspective that really was very painful for me for the earlier part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But now the dividends are paying off,
uh-huh.
and I really enjoy being able to look at life through a different lens or perspective.
I think when people, it doesn't seem like it's wrong to learn about other cultures.
Not at all.
I think it's healthy to learn about other cultures.
Wonderful.
I don't even have a problem with learning about religious beliefs that I don't agree with.
Sure.
I've spoken to people who are atheists, for example. I listen to their viewpoints. I like to believe my faith is strong enough that I'm not going to be dissuaded from my belief system. At least
yeah.
I'll listen to what they have to say and say, okay, you know, I don't agree with you, but I just don't think that kind of, or is it happening? Does that happen enough, or is it just?
I think, you know, we tend to polarize each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think it happens on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to just step back and remember, as human beings, we have more in common than we realize.
It's unfortunate, too, because in the political world, too, we see that. It's almost like if I even listen to what they're saying and I and I hear that from both sides, on the right and on the left, the extreme wings. If I just even listen and give them even the time and acknowledge their opinion, I might lose votes because my base isn't going to support me. So I have to just tell them they are evil and demons and they're wrong.
Well, thank God I'm not a politician because I couldn't do that.
I couldn't do that either. And that seems to be what happens in our society, because the word negotiate is viewed as a negative word in our society. And I think that applies to what we were talking about, cultural boundaries.
Right.
And it's almost like people don't want to go past their own. This is a situation where maybe you say, we want to go past our boundary. You know, our belief system is this, but let's go a little past our boundary and learn more about other cultures. And maybe by extending our boundaries, we'll do better.
Or just realize this is where my boundary is. Now let me hear about yours. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, while we have a few minutes left, also talk about gender issues with cultural expectations.
Please do.
And, you know, it happens a lot in marriages, too, even with not having a different nationality or ethnicity, but growing up culturally and getting socialized differently in the family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of issues can come up in marriages that are tied to gender.
Okay.
Like, this is the role that, you know, this is what I expect from my wife. This is what I expect from my husband.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're not meeting my gender expectations.
Traditional male-female roles.
Yes. And we're seeing from time to time where it's being switched, even in Christian marriages, where the couple figures out that the husband is a much better caregiver and is much better nurturing the children, and the wife is the one with the profession and the degrees, and she's a much better breadwinner, and she's not interested in staying home and keeping house.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Again, there's no cookie-cutter answer.
Mm-hmm.
It could be good or it could be bad, depending on how they're applying it.
Boy, time goes so fast when the conversation is interesting. Gidi Hansen, Growing Place, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
If you're looking for some good therapy, you need some help, marriage issues, cult, whatever it is, you might want to give her a call at 588-0448, 588-0448. You can also learn more about The Growing Place at tgplace.com. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. So long.